Hi, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you are listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Somehow, it has all added up to song, earth, air, rain, and light, the labor and the heat, the mortality of the young. I will go free of other singing. I will go into the silence of my songs to hear this song clearly. Yep, it's me back again. Me, Utah Phillips, as I say, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, here with Steve Baker, who's pushing the knobs and twirling the dials. Of course, that was Jimmy and Nancy Borsdorf, Hawks and Eagles. I never tire of introducing them because I think they're some of the finest musicians in North America. The poem you just heard was A Song Sparrow Singing in the Fall by Wendell Berry. Game laws. Animals. This is going to be a program about and for animals. You know, people aren't the only traveling entertainers. There are as many or more animals who are bent to the same task for the sake of profit. Many are abused, imprisoned, or forsaken when they no longer have any human use. These animals have a strong, strong advocate in PAWS, Performing Animals Welfare Society, and International Rescue Operation, that's operating out of Galt, California. Their P.O. box is 849. In Galt, the zip is 95632. Box 849, Galt, California, zip 95632. Boy, get a hold of them. It is to them that this particular program is respectfully dedicated. Here's Merlin in the Cave of the Animals, reminding Arthur. There are about 25,000 earthworms in every field acre. They turn over in England alone 320 million tons of soil a year, and they are found in almost every region of the world. In 30 years, they will alter the whole earth's surface to the depth of 7 inches. The earth, without worms, would soon become cold, hard-bound, void of fermentation, and consequently sterile. Why should not God have come to earth as an earthworm? There are a great many more worms than men, and they do a great deal more good.
The snake baked the whole cake, and he sent the frog to watch him. The frog said it was him, and the lizard came and took it. Bring back my whole cake, you long-tailed nanny.
Chickens. I hate chickens. Chickens are too stupid to live. Every chicken I eat is one less chicken I must suffer to share the earth with. Goddamn chickens. I hate chickens. Well, when you grow up a white man in mid-20th century industrial America, you inherit a lot of sexism, a lot of racism, things you don't want. I invest it all in the humble chicken. Then I can love everybody. I am my own coyote. Figure that out. Yeah. No, you got to control your bigotry. You got to control your bigotry in this kind of a culture. And I inherited a lot of it. I managed through sheer will to confine my bigotry to chickens, most Christians, and the French. Yeah. There's a lot of latitude in there. A lot of latitude, yeah. Had the two chickens for pets when I was a kid. No, there was no pet food, no ration stamps for pet food during the Second World War, so I had these two dumb chickens to pick up the seed in the Victory Garden. One of them got sick, so I had to kill the other one to make chicken soup to get the first one better. I don't make this stuff up. One we killed came back and haunted us. Ever been haunted by a chicken? Kind of a poultrygeist. He said, groping for their level and finding it. No, my uncle ran a chicken ranch over there in Mighton, Utah, in the Uinta Basin. I remember my uncle came in from the chicken, or my aunt was out in the chicken yard. She came in one day and said, at our 30th wedding anniversary, go out back and kill a chicken. He said, why blame a chicken for something that happened 30 years ago?
Everything he hears. His back is brawny and his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak. And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mute. Oh, would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar. I've been better off than you are. Would you rather be a pig? A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His shoes are a terrible disgrace. He's sloppy and he's dirty and he's grungy in front. When he talks, all he does is grunt. And if you don't care a feather or a fig, you may grow up to be a pig. And all the monkeys ain't in a zoo. Every day you'll see quite a view. So you see, it's all of you. You could be better than you are. You could be swinging on a star. You could be swinging on a star. You could be swinging on a star.
Now, Bob Diener had no use for thoroughbred horses. You know, he wouldn't bet them, he wouldn't own them, he wouldn't deal in them at all. He said they were the stupidest creatures on earth because of the inbreeding. So I asked him to talk about that for a bit. What do you got against thoroughbred horses? I mean, they're big, they're strong, sounds like they should be able to do some kind of work if you can handle them right. He said, well, you know, I did have one thoroughbred horse that was given to me in settlement of a debt. It was the stupidest creature on the face of God's green earth. Dumb brute. Why, I had a particularly hard week setting post holes. I went into town to have a hoorah and a go-round. Went into the old bar there, and there was Bob and Faye's White Horse in Price, Utah. I went in there. And I just got down myself. I didn't get plastered, I got stuccoed. I was paralyzed, couldn't move, and that ridiculous brute come right in through the door, through the swinging doors, and dragged me out by my galluses, flung me up onto the saddle. It loped all the way back to the ranch, in right into the bunkhouse, bucked me off onto my bunk. Not only that, that stupid brute went over to the cook shack, fired up the stove, boiled up a pot of coffee, brought it and the cream and the sugar back, and made me drink it all, tucked me in. Not only that, I woke up next morning with a hangover that would wound a moose. And that stupid brute dug post holes the better part of the day so I could lie abed and recover. Fortunately, a greenhorn come by, and I sold that dumb brute off at what I thought to be a fair price. I said, Bob, that sounded to me like a pretty intelligent animal. He said, damn it, Utah, you know us cowboys don't use cream and sugar in our coffee.
Well, here I am back again. Now, I know that I could tell these stories to you sitting right here in the studio, but I don't know what you're doing out there. You could be baking bread. You could be peeing off the back porch for all I know. You know, when I'm sitting on a stage and there's an audience, they respond immediately, and they tell me right away whether they like it or don't like it. So, but this way, the timing goes all to hell. So I would prefer to give you these stories as I've gleaned them from recordings of live performances when there are flesh and blood people in front of me that I could bounce off of. Well, we started out there with the great Jody Steckert and his Snake Baked a Hoe Cake. Chickens, well, I told that to people at the Kate Wolf Memorial Festival just in the middle of summer. Dave Van Ronk there singing Swing on a Star. And then that last frippery was in a cowboy bar in Flagstaff, Arizona, called Charlie's, when I was coming down from Prescott, Arizona. Prescott, well, that's where I found this next piece. You know the old story, you know, if you went to school, you may have got it. Pegasus, the winged horse. Bellerophon was hired to go knock off the Chimera. And Athena gave him a golden bridle, and he was able to catch the Pegasus. Well, of course, in his hubris, he rode up to Mount Olympus, and the clatter of the hooves awakened Zeus, who just picked him off with a lightning bolt, and he wound up broken and crushed down on the earth. And the animal wins again. Somehow, Curly Fletcher, the old cowboy poet from the turn of the century, got hold of that, and he made a cowboy version of the Pegasus story. Here, you're going to listen to it recited at the 50th anniversary reunion of the Grand Canyon Band in Prescott, Arizona. The recitation is by Slim Kite, an old-time fiddler from Chino Valley, Arizona, Mustang with Wings.
And this is a true story. I'll back him up.
You can bet anything that Slim tells you is true.
You was there. You saw it.
Yeah.
I told you. Come gather around me, cowboys, and listen to me close. I'll tell you about a Mustang. It must have been a ghost. You've probably heard of a cayuse in the days they called them steeds, that spent his time with the angels and only come down for his feed. He goes by the name of Ucayus. He has his wings to fly. He eats and drinks in the Badlands and ranges around in the sky. It seemed that he belonged to an outfit, some sisters and mooses, they say. They always kept him in hobbles till he broke them and got away. For years they tried hard to catch him, but he kept right on running free. The riders wore way too much clothing. The cowboys were knights, then you see. He sure bears a bad reputation. I don't savvy how it began. Part eagle, part horse, and part devil. They say he's meaner than sin. Well, I was riding that rim rock country up around Wild Horse Springs. I like to fell out of my saddle, and that bronc sailed in on his wings. It seemed that it must be plumb loco as I gazed up over a bank, watching that albino Mustang pruning his wings as he drank. Finally, he filled up with water, wings folded, he starts into graze. I noticed he's headed up my way, where I straddle my horse in a daze. Then I got so excited, my hands were trembling in hope, I reached down on my saddle, and I fumbled a noose in my rope. Ready, I ride right out on him, just spurring and swinging my loop. Before he could turn and get going, I throwed, and she fit like a hoop. I jerked out my slack, and I dallied. I turned, and my horse throwed him neat. He let out a blood-curdling bellow while I'm hog-tying his feet. I put my hackamore on him, a pair of blinds on his eyes. I hobbled his wings tight together so he couldn't go back to the sky. I put my saddle on him, my cinches sink deep in his hide. I take the slack out of my spur straps, cause it looked like a pretty tough ride. I crawled him just like he was gentle. I'm a little bit nervous, you bet, but I feel pretty sure I can ride him. I still got his wings hobbled yet. I pulled up the blinds and he's snorting. He walks like he's walking on eggs. He grunts and explodes like a pistol. I see he's at home on his legs. Wolves, panthers, and grizzlies, catamounts, tranchers, and such. Scorpions, snakes, and bad whiskey compared to him wasn't much. By golly, he starts getting rougher. He's spinning and sunfishing too. I got both hands full of leather. I'm worrying, wishing he's through. Then he hit the ground with a twister and he busted the wing hobbles there. Before I could loosen and quit him, we're gliding away through the air. He smooths out and keeps right on climbing till way down miles below. I got a look at the mountains, and the peaks are all covered with snow. Up through the clouds, I'm freezing. I'm scared and plumb dizzy to boot. I sure wish I had me that thing that they call a parachute. Then I must have went locoed, or I was probably just sound asleep. For when I woke up, I was lying down on the ground in a heap. Now, I've lost a good saddle and bridle and my rope and some other good things, but I'm sure glad to be here to tell you to stay off the Mustangs with wings. How about that?
Mustang with wings, well, and the horse wins again. Hurrah for the horse. Dogs now. My wife has taught me the love of dogs and taught me about the love that dogs can bring to you. I've had a fear of dogs for many years before I met her. It was tramping. I'd be out there tramping, and of course you are the strange smell in the block. You are the stranger, and so if the dogs just didn't seek you out and hassle you, the people would set the dogs on you. So most tramps are pretty wary of dogs, except those that travel with them. I remember once I was down there in Washington, California, up here on Highway 20. There was a fellow I wanted to interview down there who hung out at the old Washington Hotel, supposed to be a good storyteller. Now, I went down there to find him, and I did. He was sitting on the front porch. He was the founder of the Washington, California Set, Whittle, and Spit Club. Only three rules to join it: never sit in the sun, never spit into the wind, never whittle towards yourself. You can start one right where you live. That's no fooling. Well, he was sitting there whittling, and a big dog sunning itself at his feet. So I approached the porch with some caution. I said, "Excuse me, but does your dog bite?" He said, "No, it doesn't." Well, I stepped up on the porch. That dog flew at me, took a big bite out of my calf. I said, "Hell, I thought you told me your dog doesn't bite." He said, "Well, mine doesn't, but that one there does." See what I mean? I don't know what you're doing. Look, here's a song that you grow up with. I heard this over my crystal set when I was a kid, probably out of the Grand Old Opry in the middle of the 1940s. This is the dog song of all dog songs. Here's Ramblin' Jack Elliott and Old Shep.
When I was a lad, an old Shep was a pup. Over hills and mountains we'd stray. Just a boy and a dog, we were both full of fun. And we grew up together that way. I remember the time by the old swimming hole. When but I would have drowned beyond doubt. But old Shep was there, to the rescue he came. He jumped in and helped pull me out. Years rolled on by and old Sheppy grew old. His eyesight was fast growing dim. Then one day the doctor looked at him and said, I can't do no more for him, Jim. And with hands that were trembling, I picked up my gun and I aimed it at Shep's faithful head. But I just couldn't do it, I wanted to run. I wish they would shoot me instead. I went to his side and I sat on the ground. Old Shep laid his head on my knee, and I stroked the best pal a man ever had. I cried till I scarcely could see. For old Sheppy, he knew he was going to go. He reached down and looked at my hand. Then he looked up at me, just as much as to say, we're parting, but I understand. Now old Sheppy is gone, where the good dog is gone, and no more with old Shep will I roam. But if dogs have a heaven, there's one thing I know.
It's like the end of a grand opera, isn't it? It just takes a long, long time to get it over with. That's great Ramblin' Jack Elliott, an old friend, and our old friendly song, great old song, old Shep. Rail Dogs. I've known some of those. Used to be before UPS, there was the REA, Railway Express Agency, and then, of course, the mail traveled on the trains, too, as it's beginning to again. There were dogs to guard the depots, to guard the warehouses. They were called rail dogs, and every now and then one of them would hop into an open express car, and it would go on to the next division. It would just be mobile through the system. One of the great ones was a dog by the name of Oni. Back in the middle 1890s. Well, it was 1888 that Oni started off on the Railway Express out of Albany, New York. Went through division after division. Over the years, they collected baggage tags, about 1,017 tags, tokens, trinkets, and medals. Used to jingle like a junk wagon. Now, in 1895, Oni got on with the U.S. Mail on the steamship Victoria out of Tacoma. They didn't know how to handle them in Japan, so they made a special classification called Registered Dog Package. He went from Tacoma to Japan, China, Singapore, Suez, Algiers, Azores, New York, back to Tacoma. 132 days, 143,000 miles. Now that's some kind of dog. Queenie now. Well, I found out about Queenie in the Rail Museum over there in Golden, Colorado. In one of the cases, there was a silver collar. that belonged to Queenie. Queenie had apparently years ago barked and awakened a telegraph operator so that he could become aware that the bridge ahead had washed out and was able to signal the train and prevent a terrible wreck. So the town of Golden gave the dog a collar. And it said on there, to Queenie, the more we see of men, the more we love dogs.
Oh, I wanna be a dog. I wanna wag my tail. Chase cars and knock over garbage cans. Bite the lady who brings the mail. Oh, I wanna be a dog. I wanna drool on the floor. Get pats on the head, chase cats, get fed, chew your shoes, and bark at the door. Oh, I wanna be a dog. I wanna dig big holes. I wanna sniff French poodles and basset hounds and pee on telephone poles. Oh, I wanna be a dog. I want a big wet nose. I wanna run in the street, get mud on my feet, and jump up onto your clothes. Oh, I wanna have dog breath. I wanna learn to growl. Scratch fleas and ticks and run after sticks. I want the moon to make me howl. Be a dog. I want to sleep on the ground. Being human these days is getting too crazy. I just want to be a hound. Being human these days is getting too crazy. I just want to be a hound.
Well, Kenny Hall there. Boy, I do need to get down and visit Kenny. Doggone it. Well, maybe before Thanksgiving I'll have a chance to do that. Stan Hugel. As I said before, Stan Hugel and I crewed together on the American ship Eagle. He was the last of the living shantymen. We sat out there by the capstan and he told me a story. He said, the whaling ships up in the far north, when they were asleep down below the waterline, they would hear singing through the hall. And far from their sweethearts, far from their wives, they turned the sound into the song of the mermaids. And they loved it, not knowing that the next morning they would go up on deck and slaughter that which they loved. Because what they were hearing was the song of the whales. They never made the connection. We still haven't. I'm going to play you the Whaleman's Lament. It comes from the log, the personal journal of a Yankee whaling ship, the Bark Catalpa in 1856, sung here by Stuart Frank, aboard ship in Old Mystic Seaport in Connecticut. I'm going to follow that then with The Wounded Whale, taken from the log of the Uncas in 1843, sung here by the great Scottish singer Archie Fisher.
Was on the briny ocean on a whale ship I did go. Oft times I thought of distant friends, oft times I thought of home. Remembering of my youthful days, it grieves my heart full sore. And fain would I return again to my own native shore. Though dreary, discontented, I then resolved to go. My fortune's on the seas to find, to ease me of my woe.
I shipped aboard a whale ship to sail without delay to the Pacific Ocean, there for a while to stay. Through dreary storm and tempest, and through some steady gales, around Cape Horn we made our way. On lookout for sperm whales. They will use you, they will rob you, worse than any slave. Before you go a whaling, boys, you'd best be in your grave. If ever I return again, a solemn vow I'll make. I'll never go whaling, my liberty to stake. I'll stay at home contented, never venture far. For the pleasures are but few, my boys, far from your native shore.
Sun from her ocean bed was rising, brought underwater a glittering light rose. Hark from the masthead, our lookouts are crying, 'tis hard on your lee beam, a whale there she blows. Call up your sleepers, your larboard and your starboard men. Main yard aback and your boats clear away. A hard on our lee beam, see the white water gleam, glittering and foaming in glorious array. See the Leviathan in vastnesses lie, making the ocean our sumptuous bed. While high overhead the seabirds are flying, combing the billows that break o'er her head. High, white, and swimming, her dark flukes apply. Stately but slowly she sinks in the main. Peak all your oars a while, rest from your weary toil, watching and waiting, arising again. Row, hearties, row for the pride of your nation. Spring to your oars, let the reeking sweat flow. Now for the blood, let it have circulation. Forward on your thwarts, give away all you know. See how the boats advance gaily as two dance, floating like feathers over the dark blue sea. Stand up and give us some, send both your irons home. Stand up and trim your boat, we are all clear. Wounded and sore, fins and flukes in commotion. Black skin and oars contending spray. While loud, long and shrill blows the horn of the ocean, fretting and lost she brings to in dismay. All line every man and gathering all you can, lances and spades from your thwarts clear away. Now clink your oars again, while fast each boat remains, for safely and surely we hold her at bay. Surrounded by foes with strength undiminished, heed how she flashes her dark looks in the air. A lance in the life, and the struggle is finished, and see how she sinks with a chimney on fire. While so loud and shrill the cries from our scene, mocking the whale in her terrible hour. Watch her as she dies, see the blue signal flies, here she goes, fin out, and the contest is o'er.
Those of you who have read the Den Non Ron, the Song of the Seals, or recollect how Manus Macodrum, himself one of the seal folk, would be knowing when the tide was ebbing across the great reef of Bernarray, I would hear the call of the skua on the rocky promontory and the wailing of the moon restless plover on the hill behind. How, after the earthing of his love and the tide had ebbed in his heart, he would be crossing the Sound of Bernarray. How the island folks would be seeing him at low tide upon the reef, singing wild and strange runes. So does Alastair Alpin MacGregor's book talk of one of the descendants of the seal folk, those creatures which could cast their sealskins and assume mortal form.
A sea maid sings on yonder reef, the spellbound seals draw near. A lilt that lures beyond belief mortals enchanted here.
World goes on again.
Well, now, and that was the great Gene Ridpath from Scotland doing the Song of the Seals. You know, it occurs to me that some of you folks out there are urban-bound. You're living in the middle of the city. You don't have a chance to hear wild sounds except at midnight in the street. There's an old man down there in southern Utah who taught me how to deal with that problem. He says, you're going to go among city folks. You ought to know how to be able to make some of those sounds. So we've got folks here in the studio, and they're going to help me teach you how to do that. And I want you to remember how to do this and then do it. On both sides of my house here in Nevada City, we have ponds. And in season, the frogs proliferate, millions of tiny frogs, and they all make that beautiful frogs chorus that lulls us to sleep and wakes us up in the morning. I'm going to show you how to do that. Now, this lady here, I'm going to have you in a fairly high voice do the word tomatoes. Tomatoes, 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 tomatoes. Try it out.
Tomatoes, 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 tomatoes.
Okay. Now, Steve, I want you to do it at alto here. Do potatoes, 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 potatoes. Go ahead.
Potatoes, 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 potatoes.
And then I'm going to do fried bacon in a deep voice. So let's go. Let's try it a bit. Okay, one, two, three.
Tomatoes, tomatoes, tomatoes,
fried bacon, fried bacon, fried bacon, fried bacon, fried bacon, fried bacon. You got it? Hey, okay, now do that tonight, you know, and lull yourselves to sleep. Get the kids in your bed, do the frogs chorus. Hot dog, I've always wanted to teach that coast to coast. Well, now, thank you very, very much for helping out on that. Kids' folklore is the oldest folklore in the world. They pass on their lore in an uncorrupted form to the younger ones coming up under them. Oh, very, very old. Now, the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth I, was supposed to have been quite homely, and she never married. Finally, the Parliament wanted to marry her off to a French duke. The English people, the common people, objected to that. So a fellow made a broadside ballad in which the Queen Elizabeth was Miss Mousie, and, of course, the French duke was called the Frog, as they still do deal with Frenchmen. And the fellow that made up the broadside, he got drawn and quartered, and his body hung up over the gates of London for his trouble. But not before the kids got hold of that broadside ballad, and it's been with us ever since. I'd like you to listen to old Granny Almeda Riddle from Claiborne County, Arkansas, singing the kids' version of Froggy Would a Wooing Go.
A frog went a-courtin', and he did ride, singin' rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble had a sword and a pistol buckled to his side, singin' rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, he-mo, I-mo, ki-mo, ki-mo, rod-a-rod-a-ray, rop-strop, penny-winkle, flannel-doodle-yaller, buckle, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, he rode right up to Miss Mouse's house, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble said, please will you marry me, Miss Mouse, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, sir, I cannot tell you that, I'll have to ask Michael Rat, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, he-mo, I-mo, ki-mo, ki-mo, roddy, roddy, ray, or hop-strop, penny-winkle, flannel-doodle-yellow-bug, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, Uncle Rat gave his consent, singing rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble and the weasel wrote the publishment, singing rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, he-mo, I-mo, ki-mo, ki-mo, roddy, roddy, ray, and rop-strop, penny-winkle, flannel-doodle-yellow-bug, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, where will the wedding be? Oh, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, away down yonder in a hollow tree, singing rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, who will the waiters be? Will a pink-eyed gnat, a black-eyed flea, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, he-mo, I-mo, ki-mo, ki-mo, roddy, roddy, ray, or rop-strop, penny-winkle, flannel-doodle-yellow-bug, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, now what will the supper be? Oh, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, well, buttercups and a dewdrop tea, singing rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, first come in was a little white moth, she spread her wings for tablecloth, a rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, he-mo, I-mo, ki-mo, ki-mo, roddy, roddy, ray, and a rop-strop, penny-winkle, flannel-doodle-yellow-bug, rop-strop by. Mr. Gamble, The next come in was a big black gnat singing Ropstrop by Mr. Gamble, and he sat down and no knuckled rat Ropstrop by Mr. Gamble. Hemo, imo, chemo, chymo, rolly, rolly, ray, and a Ropstrop, pinnawinkle, flannel, doodle, yallerbug, a Ropstrop by Mr. Gamble. Then the frog comes swimming all across that lake, singing Ropstrop by Mr. Gamble, and he got swallowed up by a big black snake, tumor Ropstrop by Mr. Gamble. Hemo, imo, chemo, chymo, rolly, rolly, ray, your Ropstrop, pennywinkle, flannel, doodle, yallerbug, Ropstrop by Mr. Gamble.
Well, there you go, Granny Almeda Riddle, an old friend. She sang that to me when she was 79 years old. I don't think that she's with us anymore. I was down at the Americana Festival some years ago in Topanga Canyon, California. It was Will Gear's Theatricum Botanicum. The featured singer on that program was Burl Ives, a voice out of the past. Now, I was surprised that Burl was there because he had responded to the House on American Activities Committee quite differently than Will Gear, who really held out. But Will's wife assured me that they had walked together before Will passed away in that Shakespeare garden and had made their peace with each other. Well, there was a very, very old, very, very feeble Burl Ives, still a large man, singing to that amphitheater of middle to older people, middle-aged to older people. And it was like magic, because here were the songs that they had grown up with in camp. Here were the songs from their childhood. Now, I was going through a used record store, Ashley's used bookstore, with a bunch of records, and there it was, in pristine condition, an album of 78s, Burl Ives' first album, called The Wayfaring Stranger. And in it was the most famous of them all, the one that they all sang along on. You know this song, too, so you sing along, huh?
When I was young, I used to wait on master and give him his plate and pass the bottle when he got dry and brush away the bluebill flies. Give me cracked corn and I don't care. Give me cracked corn and I don't care. Give me cracked corn and I don't care. My master's gone away. And when he'd ride in the afternoon, I'd follow after with a hickory broom, the pony being rather shy, when bitten by a bluebill fly. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. My master's gone away. One day he ride around the farm, the flies so numerous they did swarm. One chanced to bite him on the thigh, the devil take the blue-tailed fly. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. My master's gone away. The pony run, he jump, he pitch, he threw my master in the ditch. He died and the jury wondered why. The verdict was the blue-tailed fly. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. My master's gone away. They lay him under a simmon tree. His epitaph is there to see. Beneath this stone I'm forced to lie, victim of a blue-tailed fly. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. My master's gone away.
A hippopotamus was standing one day on the banks of the cool Shalimar. He gazed at the bottom as it peacefully lay by the light of the evening star. Away on a hilltop sat combing her hair his fair hippopotamine maid. The hippopotamus was no ignoramus,
and sang her this sweet serenade. Mud, mud, glorious mud, nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud. The fair hippopotamus he aimed to entice from her seat on that hilltop above, as she hadn't got a ma to give her advice, came tiptoeing down to her love. Like thunder, the forest re-echoed the sound of the song that they sang as they met. His enamorata adjusted her garter and lifted her voice in duet in Russian. Gryaz, gryaz, chudnaya gryaz, luchya sredstva kakorvnaya vas, tak vas svoju damu. Follow me, follow. I povedili ya v yamu. Down to the hollow. I tam my akulimsa v chudnaya gryaz. There to improve our cultural relations. Now more hippopotami began to sing on the banks of that river so wide. I wonder now what am I to say of the scene that ensued by the Shalimar side. They dived all at once with an ear-splitting splosh, then rose to the surface again. A regular army of hippopotami, all singing this haunting refrain. That's you!
That was a drop of a hat, Great Flanders and Swan, back in the 1950s. You've been listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. Thanks for listening, and certainly thanks to Paws. In the desert, I saw a creature, naked, bestial, who, squatting upon the ground, held his heart in his hands and ate of it. I said, "Is it good, friend?" "It is bitter, bitter," he answered, "but I like it because it is bitter and because it is my heart. If I should cast off this tattered coat and go free into the mighty sky, if I should find nothing there but a vast, blue, echoless, ignorant, what then?"